Rules Committee. We are officially in subcommittee since we're lacking a quorum this morning, but since we have some very important people in the room, I want to get started on the hearing. Treasurer Edwards, yes, I know. would the committee administrator please explain the bill we have before us today?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 27 allows statements of financial impact appearing on ballots and in voters' pamphlets to include estimates of state and local government expenditures, revenues, and indebtedness that would result if a measure is not enacted.
Great. Thank you. Would the Director of Revenue come forward, Elizabeth Hartchenko, along with Treasurer Randall Edwards, please? Thank you and good morning. I don't know, I'll let you guys fight it out.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon. And with me is Elizabeth Hartchenko. We wanted to just give you a broad overview of the intent of this law and this bill. Specifically, we're trying to improve and, quite frankly, change something that I found very troubling as a member of the Price Tag Committee, and that is giving full disclosure to voters about the financial impact of a measure, whether it's been referred and or whether it's an initiative. We're really looking at a couple of things here, and we'll give you I'll give you two examples. I think Elizabeth, who's been on this committee and around it longer than I have, some other examples. But I wanted to share with you a couple of my stories and why I think it's important that for all of us that we try to improve this disclosure principle that we have in law today, but more importantly to make sure that voters have full information, particularly about the finances, the way in which their tax dollars are going to be spent or potentially spent on a measure. I'm going to give an example of one of the challenges we have with current law and why we're looking for a change. If you recall, a few years back, the legislature asked that we sell or asked the voters to approve a general obligation bond for expansion of research and development at Oregon Health Sciences University. In that, if you recall, it was structured that if the measure passed, we would have the authority, the Constitution had to be amended to get the authority, and then if that passed, then we would sell the bonds, the GO bond. If it did not pass, there was a fallback provision that the legislature created to allow us to sell a different type of financing, but that different type of financing would be more expensive. So the rationale here was to try to get the lowest cost of financing and ask the voters for that. The way the law works currently, we can only discuss if the measure passes, not if it fails. So if the measure, in this case, because we couldn't talk about if this failed, we could only give one side of the story. And as a result, I felt very frustrated by the fact that we were trying to give the voters a full picture of what your decision was to them about why we wanted to get this general obligation bonding authority. Again, current law prevents us from talking about anything regarding failure of a measure. This also happened, for example, with the pension obligation bonds. Again, a setup of general obligation bonding authority, and should it fail, there was another financing. So I think it's really important as we go forward to try to give as much information about measures as they pass and or potentially if they fail. I also believe there's a loophole in the law, which we stumbled upon recently, regarding whether or not the measure talks about who's implementing this law. Being the legislature, you, of course, know that when a measure passes, you have to address implementing the law. We had a ballot measure regarding, this is ballot measure 37, regarding labeling of genetically engineered foods, and it not only required the state to set it up, but also enforce it. Embedded in that measure was language that said, and the legislature shall implement this law. That little statement, for the most part, it really threw us for a loop because we could not discuss any financial impact with this measure because, obviously, the legislature had not implemented it. Therefore, because we couldn't predict how you would implement the law, we could not provide information about this measure. And in fact, I'll quote what we said to the voters at the time that ballot measure 37 was on the ballot. The financial impact of this measure on state and local government expenditures cannot be determined because the Legislative Assembly must act to carry out this measure. That's what we told the voters. And I can say that when we were hearing this financial impact, we had the Department of Agriculture come in and discuss with us the cost they estimated, which is the way we always work. We get estimates. We tried as best we can to put together some numbers. We had the information. In fact, I'm sure much of the information that we were hearing about, should have this passed, you would have heard the exact same financial impact. So as you can see, this measure, in my opinion, we did not give the disclosure of cost to the taxpayer on what might this cost them, or us, if you will, in implementing this new law should it become law. And again, we're trying to tighten this up in many ways to, again, allow us to make a disclosure, get rid of this loophole, allow this price tag committee to talk about measures that pass, measures that fail, and to give full disclosure of what we believe are important elements of the financing of any type of measure that comes before us. Elizabeth, would you like to add to that?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. I provided a single sheet. It's headed Senate Bill 27 Measure Highlights. And I'd like to discuss, there were some Dash 1 amendments prepared, and I trust the committee has those. I'd like to discuss the intent behind the measure and then the Dash 1 amendments also. Under current law, the Fiscal Impact Committee consists of the Secretary of State, the State Treasurer, the Director of the Department of Administrative Services, and the Revenue Director. And our charge is to estimate for each ballot measure, whether it's referred by the legislature or initiated by the voters, the impact on state revenue, which would be tax money, in or out, state expenditures, either more or less, or debt, that would be created if the measure was enacted. And Treasurer Edwards has already pointed that out. The language of the current law says, if this measure is enacted, this is what will happen. We're directed to put pretty limited information in the fiscal impact statement. We have to estimate basically a single dollar amount for the impact of the measure, only if it passes, and there's nothing in the law that allows us to explain how we got to our number. The estimate actually goes onto the ballot along with the ballot caption and short explanation that is prepared by the Department of Justice, and it also goes in the voter's pamphlet. This bill was actually drafted and introduced last session by the Secretary of State, and at that time there were some amendments proposed because the group, the members of the committee had gotten together and talked about additional issues, and things seem to come up every election cycle, and I've been through four now with two Secretaries of State, two Treasurers, and three different Department of Administrative Services directors over the years, and we have collided with the limitations in the current statute more than once, as the Treasurer has pointed out. So I want to speak to you to the Dash 1 amendments, which actually delete the text of the bill and start fresh. The key elements of the bill, if you approve the amendments, would be to add a representative from local government to the committee. That representative would be selected by the four committee members. In the last three election cycles, we've seen quite a bit of impact by some measures that are going on the ballot on local government, and at the state level, we really don't have the understanding of impacts on local government that folks at the local level do, and so we thought that by adding a person to the group, we would be able to give the voters better information about the impact on local government. It would permit the committee to estimate the financial effect of if the measure was defeated. The Treasurer has given you two examples of where bonding would be a less expensive alternative form of a debt structure than something else. I'd like to give you a more an example that still stands out in my head from the election cycle, I think, which the first time I served. There had been a court decision from the Court of Appeals that affected how the Trojan nuclear, something about the Trojan nuclear plant and the financial effect of the decommissioning of that on the state. And the legislature concluded that that outcome was not good public policy and had adopted a measure that would change the outcome of that court case and eliminate or significantly limit the financial impact on I think it was mostly local government, of that decision. And the measure was referred by petition. So if the measure passed, there would be no significant financial impact on state or local government. If the measure failed, there would have been a, I think it was over $100 million impact on revenues. And we couldn't tell the voters that because that would happen if not if the measure was enacted, but if it failed. So that's another feature of this, is for the committee to look at the entire financial picture surrounding a measure, and if there's a consequence that the voters ought to be aware of that results from the measure not being enacted, we would be able to inform them of that. We've also experienced over the last several election cycles very complex measures that we have, and the treasurer and I have gone round and round on this on the committee, that really we're not confident we can give a number to. We could estimate a range and say it could be from here to here based on some assumptions that we have to make because the measure isn't law and the legislature hasn't responded to it. And so that's another feature of these Dash 1 amendments, is to allow the committee, when in its judgment that's going to be the most informative to the public, to express the estimate in a range. The Dash 1 amendments also would permit the committee to prepare two items, the short estimate that goes on the ballot, and then up to a 500-word explanation of the assumptions that are behind that estimate. And particularly for the more complicated measures, that would allow the committee to give the voters more information about the potential impacts of a measure that's before them. The example that the treasurer gave of the genetically engineered food labeling law, it was clear to the committee members that the legislature had a range of choices of how to implement that law. There was a minimalist approach, there was what we thought was a most likely approach, and then there was a probably the full meal deal. And we had to either pick a number or say we could not determine the impact simply because the legislature had not yet acted. If these changes are enacted, the committee would be able to say this measure could cost between this much and this much, and then explain in a statement that would only be printed in the voters' pamphlet, these are the assumptions that we made, this is what we think is most likely, and here's where the unknowns still rest. The other changes in the Dash 1 amendments are trying to just make the language a little more clear. And I know Legislative Council, whenever they start working with a statute, try to make sure that it's grammatically correct and stylistically consistent. And so I think the rest of the changes are of that nature. But I think, having gone through several cycles with this, I think what it will allow is the committee to be better able to give the public the full range of information that will help them make a well-informed decision, just as we try to give the legislature as much information about financial impact of measures as we can.
I might just, happy to answer any questions. Just add in closing that I know there could be some concern about whether or not this is just opening up the doors to our just ad-libbing on costs. I think if you look at the law and the amendment, we're still tied to direct costs. So we cannot venture what this might have an impact on some part of the economy. It is directly to basically the financial health or financial impact on either the state or local government. And I can say that since I've been on this committee, it's been extremely frustrating, and Elizabeth and I have gone round and around, she being a lawyer, looking at the law and the box that we've been put in. And I believe we need to be kept in a box, but I also think we need to have the ability to give the best information that we can. And again, not looking at this as opening up, we can just freelance on the financing. We're trying to give the information as best we can, given often the testimony we hear, and then assess that and try to give even the ranges would help a lot in giving a little more disclosure on the potential financial impact a measure might have on state and local government. And I think more importantly, as we've been watching, these measures have a greater impact. And I think it's important for the voters to understand what they're asking of their tax dollars, and so they'd better understand how a measure might impact them and the state.
Great. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Secretary, are you, by your closing comments, it's kind of hot today, are you saying that there's never any politics within the Price Tag Committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, my view is that this committee has been very diligent in giving voters information that is presented to it, assessing it, and again, I don't believe there's been politics behind the information we give out.
Madam Chair,
Senator Atkinson,
do you believe that some people could think that there are politics played by the Price Tag Committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think I'd have to leave that up to the person thinking about that. Again, interest groups from both sides come and present. They have the opportunity to give their side of the story, just like you hear legislation. I make this very analogous to when you see legislation, often if it has a fiscal impact, somebody's come up with a number to describe what it is. In this case, the history of this has been for us to take testimony, take information, using, and again, you see the makeup of this committee are people who have varying insights into the financial picture, largely of the state, although we're asking a local government representative to be added to make an assessment using our backgrounds to try to come up with the best number.
Right, one more question.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. The Dash 1 amendment is the one that adds the local government person.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of my concern is that that would round it out to 5 government people, and that's, you know, giving the stamp of government approval to the number. But what's, you know, there's, you can make numbers do whatever you want. I mean, you and I are trained the same as far as we took the same classes. You can move numbers around, right? And so I think that's part of our concern. My concern is that ballot measure, what was it, 7 had this massive price tag on it that was used to, some people could argue that it was used for propaganda against measure 737. And, you know, we went through a couple of tax increases that were referred. We went through 5 special sessions. And I don't know if Oregonians necessarily believe the numbers that are on the page. And so my concern is opening this up even wider just to further keep that skepticism up. I have to tell you, I'm not pointing any fingers at the Price Tag Committee per se or either of you personally, but I'm skeptical of the process.
Any of you wish to respond?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, given the significance of measures that have been before the voters over the last 6 to 8 years, I think your points are really valid ones. The issues that are at stake and the concerns that folks that are interested in the outcomes on different measures have, we have seen the campaigns seize on the fiscal impact estimates and use them as part of a campaign, and that's going to happen. We can't prevent that. What the statute would require us to do is pretty much the same as what the statute requires the committee that does the explanation to do, and that's to the best of our ability prepare an impartial, concise, and statement so that the voters have that information. We don't have control over what people do with it, afterwards. But let me just tell you a story about the that Measure 7. When that was before the Fiscal Impact Committee, Measure 37. When that came before the Fiscal Impact Committee, we had folks who were in favor of it arguing that that this didn't have to have a significant financial impact because government had the option to allow people to use their property the way they were asking, and there would be no payment would be due. People who were opposed to the measure said, you know, it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and you need to tell the voters that. Where we ended up was the only direct, which the treasurers emphasized, the only direct consequences that we could see as a result of enactment of that measure was that the state and local government would have to set up processes by which people could bring their request to use their land the way that they wanted to use their land or to be compensated for the loss in value. We could not predict how much the loss in value was going to be. And so the fiscal impact statement was limited to what we perceived the cost to be of setting up the processes. So there is political pressure, absolutely, on the group. I think one of the reasons you've got two bureaucrats on it is because we're a little more impervious to that than folks that are elected. And our job is to just try and make sure that we assess as best we can what we think that the impact's going to be if the measure passes. But you're right. Folks, grab the numbers and do use them.
You done? I think what Senator Atkinson is asking is there a better way we could do this? And I guess my first question is, are the voters entitled to this information before they vote on ballot measures? And I guess I would ask Treasurer Edwards to respond to that as opposed to Ms. Honchenko. But are the voters entitled to this information before they vote?
Madam Chair, I think it's critical that voters understand how a measure is going to impact their tax dollars, and I think that this is a critical component of the initiative referendum process, which is are making law, as we all know, constitutional law, statutory. They need to understand, just like you do, what might that cost the state, local government, how their tax dollars as a voter might be used to spend to pay for something. And again, I want to emphasize we are estimating direct costs, and I also want to emphasize these are estimates. Clearly, nobody has a crystal ball to know exactly how much something is going to cost, just like you don't know how much exactly a bill is going to cost or how over time that might change. But we're trying to give the voters, and I think transparency to that, and the addition of a voter's pamphlet statement explaining our rationale, I think is really important. We're just trying to give a little more insight into the numbers, why we need the numbers there. And again, I think that's really important for voters to see that.
Given the political realities right now, within the price tag committee, did you have any conversations about how this could be done so that voters might perceive this estimate as being more fair or less political or whatever?
Well, I guess you're implying that somehow people have been saying they've been unfair. The voters have been saying that. I've never heard that from a voter. The interest groups may, on both sides, pro, con, have been frustrated with us as much as anyone. I suppose they're the people who are the most focused on what's going on. I have not heard from a voter that somehow this was skewed a certain way. So, from my best of my knowledge, I haven't heard that complaint personally.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Shields.
Just for the record, tell us again, who's on this committee now? Is there any way to add, even beyond the amendments, others to the committee that could make it more bulletproof in terms of this kind of accusation of unfairness?
Well, the committee members by statute are the state treasurer, the secretary of state, the director of the Department of Administrative Services, which is responsible, obviously, for the budget side in state government, and the director of revenue, presumably because of the knowledge that the revenue department has about the revenue side. Treasury has debt, obviously. And those are the current statutory members.
That's just part of my question.
trying to expand it.
Yeah.
Well, again, I think we were trying to add somebody, and I may be mistaken, but we're adding somebody who has a government, local government perspective. It doesn't necessarily have to be a local elected official. In fact, I think you have to have some financial background. It could be a local county treasurer, city manager. It could be somebody who has some insight into the financial workings of that organization. You know, and I think, I'll be honest, I think if there's some way people feel that we need to add a citizen, that's fine. I don't think this in no way, our intent here is to try to give a little more disclosure. I don't think it's been a process that has been politicized, and I think we're trying to be fair.
Sarah Shields.
I think that voters want as much information as they can get on decisions at all times. I think that they can sort out. I think they're smart enough to sort out for themselves if your commission, your price tag commission, is not giving them honest information. And certainly the editorial boards would be toasting you or roasting you or whatever if you didn't do that. But I guess I'm asking you to think if there's a way to get into the... I heard Senator Atkinson's point. Everybody here is either a bureaucrat or an elected person. Is there some place, somewhere to get a recognized presence from one or two people in the private sector that everybody could agree to? Have you thought about that? I mean, a commission of four or five isn't paralyzed by becoming a commission of six or seven. You know what I'm driving at? So I'm just asking you, have you thought about that as a solution to this perceived problem? Or as you contend, Mr. Treasurer, maybe it's just a perceived problem on part of interest groups on both sides, and the voters are more trustworthy. I don't know. I'm just asking you to cogitate a minute on this problem.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, I guess we came to say we think there are technical problems with the law that's prohibiting us from giving information out, which we think is good information. If the committee feels that there's some other side issue here about the potential politics around it, I think in our good faith effort was to try to add somebody with a local government perspective. If there's a will or need to try to add a private citizen or two, I'm not opposed to that. I don't think the committee is either. Obviously, that's not our decision. But again, I would stress what we're trying to do, and again, I've not heard personally from voters that this has been a problem of these numbers have been cooked. Now, people can, as Senator Atkinson say, distrust government anyway, so you could argue even if you had a couple of private people on there, that would that add to the debate or not? I don't know. I mean, some of those private people will not know the inner workings of where the fiscal impact might come at a state and local level. They might see it and concur. I guess my view is at this point, it doesn't hurt us to add some private viewpoints. I'm also would like to see us try to improve the information, and that's really the intent of this bill.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a number of questions. First of all, when the concept was introduced to me, I thought, geez, this really bears exploration. So we have talked to a lot of our members about it, and some of them have come back with some questions for me that I think might help us understand better how this thing could roll out. First of all, we asked to see a couple of examples of what meter summaries might look like with bills that we know or initiatives that we know have passed. And I think that might help people understand what kind of information would be given. For instance, I can't determine whether or not this is meant to be a general cost estimate or it would actually bring the cost estimates down to the average taxpayer or the average homeowner. you know, frequently when we see measures, you can look at a measure summary that says this will cost the average homeowner of a $60,000 house X dollars.
Thank you.
And I think that might be a helpful way to describe cost. I think people are really dependent on the government for fair and unbiased reporting in the voters pamphlet. This is the first time we've taken the opportunity to look at the other side of the equation and say, okay, what can we save? And that's the example that you gave with the two different bond offerings with the OHSU $200 million offering. But it puts, I think, a little bit of an uncomfortable spin for some folks on it because, in the immortal words of Scott Thomason, an auto dealer, he said, if you don't buy a car from me today, I can't save you any money. And I think it's a marketing program that people are well aware of. Here's your savings. If you spend this much money, here's what you'll save. I know when I go to the local grocery store, they're very happy to send me home with a little receipt that circles the amount that I saved by spending my money there that day. And I think that this sort of fits in that category. And this is done very well. I think what you do is open yourself up to the charge of the potential for politicizing issues. A question, Madam Chairman. Don't all of the members of this committee have access to arguments to and arguments for and arguments against already?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, the process, and you might want to visit with Marjorie Taylor of your staff, who staffs the process of the development of all of the statements that go into the voter's pamphlet and onto the ballot. My understanding is that where the fiscal impact statement fits in the process is a measure has to be definitely qualified for the ballot, so that means it has to have been referred by the legislature or sufficient signatures have to have come in. That the fiscal impact is being developed contemporaneously with the development of the explanatory statement, and that the arguments for and against that then are that people submit to be published in the voter's pamphlet follow in time. We are part of that very tightly timed cycle that starts with a measure is qualified for the ballot and there's an election coming and when the ballot has to be printed, and so there's a tight schedule that that we've had to keep in terms of getting together, developing a draft estimate, holding a hearing for public comment on the draft estimate, and then making any changes that are appropriate based on the testimony that came in from the public hearing, and then certifying the statement for inclusion by the Secretary of State into the development of the ballots and the voters' pamphlet.
So, Madam Chairman, I'll take that as a yes, that there is a concurrent process, but in fact, wouldn't every member of the price tag committee also have access to the section of the voters' pamphlet that says arguments for, arguments against?
No.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, are you asking whether we would buy a pro or con argument?
Madam Chairman, what I'm suggesting is that every single person in the state of Oregon can purchase an argument for or argument against. I'm just asking if you have access to the voters' pamphlet to make this argument elsewhere. And I think clearly that you do have this right to make an argument about cost elsewhere. So I guess the point for me is it's only what's at stake here is the imprimatur of government. What's at stake here is the government good housekeeping seal of approval on a cost estimate or a savings estimate. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, Madam Chairman, we've asked for a couple of examples of how these cost estimates might look so that members can say, well, here's what they look like. You know, here's what a savings statement might look like. Because if we're about to give the imprimatur of government the good housekeeping seal of approval, we want to make sure that it isn't a sales tool, that it isn't a closing device, that it isn't a manipulative, but in fact an independently arrived at, scrupulously objective argument. And Madam Chair, I have additional questions.
Okay. So, but Senator Ferriello, I think that the Play Safety Committee is already in statute, and what we're exploring are providing ways to give voters additional information when under the two examples that both Ms. Harshenko and Treasurer Edwards have described. I mean, we already have a statute. We're not determining whether this is going to go forward. It already is happening, and I think we're looking at additions or corrections or amendments at this point.
Now, I understand the purpose of the bill. The question I have is follows along Senator Atkins' question line, which I understood clearly. Are these political arguments? And I guess one example that I've used is at one point in time, when we were looking at the fiscal impact statement for Measure 5, the political arguments that swirled around Measure 5 were, we're going to have people dying in the streets. And the pressure on people to explore what the political outcomes of Measure 5 at that point in time and then subsequent to that, and even to the present day, are just amazing and they're horrendous. But I haven't seen what the fiscal impact statement for Measure 5 under this new rule might have looked like. And I think it would be beneficial to understand what they might look like under the new statute before we make this purchase, adopt this bill, if you will. I guess, Madam Chairman, that it's no secret that there are those in the legislature who do not, and those in the administration who do not like the initiative process. You know, I've heard from virtually many of my colleagues in the legislature and in the administration who say, gee, you know, these things are just killing us. Look at all the drivers, the cost drivers in Measure 11 and Measure 5 and now Measure 37. You know, we just got to get control of this thing. We've got to stop these initiatives. And this seems to me to be one of those issues that seems on its face to be a very logical and very reasonable exploration of the cost, but in fact there's a political motivator behind this, and that is, you know, on one hand it may be let's let people understand fully what the cost savings opportunities are. On the other hand, it's maybe there's some political argumentation that gets the seal of approval of state government for accuracy. When in fact it's clear from the transmittal letter that you brought, there some cases where you simply can't determine what the costs are going to be.
Senator Ferriello, if you wish to have Marjorie Taylor is in the room, and she can explain the process of including information in the voter's guide. She's here, and we can bring her forward if you would like to have some more information.
No, Madam Chairman, I don't need any more information. It's your call.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
Just a comment. Senator Ferriello raises a lot of good points, but I don't think there's any way to solve it. I don't think there's any way to give any one person just absolute confidence that there was no politics or that nobody exercised any personal bias in a decision. But I think if you look at the track record of what they've done, it's been reasonable. And I think they have been fairly resistant of charges of political bias and what they've come out with. And I'll just give you an example on the last election, Measure 34, the State Forest Initiative. I know the environmentalists were very upset with the fiscal impact they came out with. They just did not agree with it. They thought it was wrong. They thought it was politically biased. You know, it tilted against how they viewed it. I mean, I think you raised some good points, Senator Ferriello, but you're not going to solve them in this bill. The question is it going to be a better system with this bill or a worse system? And somehow you've got to respond to the problems that the Treasurer has raised. The Treasurer has raised, you know, when you talk about the bonding issue, that was a serious question of financial impact that was not contained in the voter statement. Really, what I think is a technical defect in the statute, and so it's a reasonable effort to remedy the defect. If you have a larger method of removing the politics, by all means, let's do it. But I don't think that's the intent of this statute, of the bill here.
Madam Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
I don't disagree with what I've heard the good senator say here this morning, but I guess I'd simply add this. What we have now is a system that determines cost, and certainly there's some controversy around that. Not everybody agrees, and that's why we have arguments for and arguments against in the voter's pamphlet. It's for people to take those cost estimates and drill into them and make those countervailing arguments, and it's open to everyone. Adding the issue of savings for taking an action or not taking an action, or for a yes vote or a no vote, is going to exponentially complicate the issue, as far as I'm concerned, because it adds another dimension of controversy. And I don't think that there's any way that you can keep politics out of that issue. So the question for me is, does this add something that brings it down to the individual? Can a taxpayer look, because we vote one at a time, can a taxpayer look at a measure summary and say, this is what it's going to cost me? Not this is what it's going to save the institution or save the state, but this is what it's going to cost me, or these are the opportunities for savings that I have as a householder, as a family. And the only way to get to that place, as far as I'm concerned, Madam Chairman, is to show me what these things are going to look like. Take a measure five. Write us a summary. You know, let us walk around in these shoes a little bit and figure out, is this politically driven? Is this empiric information? Is it potentially subject to more politicization, which I don't think we need in this process? And does this add something that's worth the cost of this, the official state seal of approval, which is the imprimatur that this is accurate information and this is how it'll roll out? And if we can't determine those things, are we willing to stand up and say that it's indeterminate? So my point, Madam Chairman, is that the concept to me is intriguing, but the way it's rolled out here, I think Senator Atkins is accurate in his assessment that it could become highly political. We've not seen what these things might look like in practice, so I think it's premature for us to take action. It is fraught with the idea that it could become very highly political. It is going to be more information with the state seal of approval on it. So, Madam Chairman, for those reasons, I'd like to see us get more information from the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer about how these summaries might look.
Actually, Senator Farrioli, the Chair is willing, we are not going to move this bill today, and the Chair is willing to entertain concrete proposals from the committee on how this process could be depoliticized. But I anticipate at some point we are going to move forward with the proposal that directly amends the current process that's in place. I would, for the record, ask Ms. Taylor to give us some information about how this is included in the voter's pamphlet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marjorie Taylor, and I'm an employee in the Committee Services Office. I staff the Financial Impact Committee and the Explanatory Statement Committees for all of the statements included in the voter's pamphlet. And I think the question that came up from Senator Farrioli was whether the arguments in support and opposition to measures are available at the same time, say, the Financial Impact Committee.
That was not my question. Madam
okay,
Chair.
Then I'm sorry.
My question is, are not the statements for and against in the voter's pamphlet available to all citizens of the state of Oregon equally?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, I think that what I have to explain to you is that the Financial Impact Committee and the Explanatory Statement Committee are preparing their statements at the same time that anyone who is preparing statements for the voters' pamphlet, arguments in support and opposition, they're preparing those separately from us. We don't have access to that information. Certainly, people who are in support and opposition to these measures have access to the committee and can provide input at the public hearing and can participate in the drafting process. So I think that committee members are certainly exposed to the pros and cons of measures as they're preparing their statements. But we don't have those actual statements that will be included in the voter's pamphlet.
So, Madam Chairman, if I might ask the question.
Senator Farrioli.
So, Ms. Taylor, what you're saying is that nobody preparing an argument for or against would have the opportunity to challenge the assumptions of the price tag committee or their methodology in the voter's pamphlet.
Madam Chair and Senator Farrioli, people who want to express support or opposition to the Financial Impact Committee and their statement that has been prepared have the opportunity to provide public comment. That's included in statute. That process is included in statute. They're also welcome to attend all of the meetings of the Financial Impact Committee, and similar to legislative meetings, the chair of the meeting can certainly call on audience members, and has in the past, to provide additional information to the committee members. Does that answer your question?
Well, Madam Chairman, it gets me a little bit closer. And the point is that either everybody in the state of Oregon has equal access to the voter's pamphlet or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they do. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
Madam Chair and Senator Ferrioli, I think so. I would agree with that.
I hope so.
Well, actually, I believe the voter's pamphlet is probably only mailed to registered voters.
Madam Chairman, I'm talking about putting in a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody with
anybody
the appropriate amount of
money, as long as you can put in.
That was my point, Madam Chairman. Right. If you want to talk about how much this measure will save, there's an opportunity in the arguments for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about how much this issue will cost, there's ample opportunity to put an argument against. And as Ms. Taylor just told us, people would have access to the work of the Price Tag Committee if they participated. If they were at the hearings, if they decided to go to the meetings.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, the work of the Financial Impact Committee and the Explanatory Statement Committee is due at the very beginning of August, generally, and the arguments in support and opposition are due at the end of August. So anyone would have access to that information, certainly after it's finalized, and at any time that they call staff of the committee, we will provide any and all information, including estimates that the committee is chewing on. It's like any public process. If somebody wants it, oh boy, get ready for the paper.
Okay, so Madam Chairman, I guess the point that I'm driving at here is that if somebody wanted to tell the citizens of Oregon how much this would save them, they could participate in the financial analysis and write an argument in favor and put it in the voter's pamphlet. The only difference is whether or not the state good housekeeping seal of approval is attached to the bottom. That's my point. That's what I think politicizes this issue.
Sarah Shields, do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Mr. Treasurer, you refer in your testimony to ballot measure 11 and the $200 million bond sale. You could only tell half the story.
Correct.
You couldn't tell the voters what it would cost if the ballot measure failed, and therefore you would have to use certificates of participation, which was a higher cost mechanism. How much did/will the higher cost mechanism cost the voters of Oregon over the life of this $200 million of financing that we did at a higher level than they could have had this ballot measure passed? How much did that cost the voters?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, I'd have to give you that specific number. I don't recall it right off the top of my head. I think, again, as you indicate, we couldn't disclose the other side of the coin here.
I understand.
And so I'll get that number to you. The pension obligation bond was another example about what the difference in cost might be in savings, or the cost, if you will, if the senator is interested in just the cost side. There's both. In this case, and I'd be happy to give you that number as well. But we do have real-life examples that we can give you.
Senator Shields.
Yes. Madam Chairman, the point is that this is real. There were real savings to be had, and I'll bet the voters of Oregon would rather be paying $20 million less in taxes rather than $20 million. I'm just picking a number out of the air, rather than $20 million more. But, Madam Chairman, the point is that there's always going to be controversy. I mean, there's some people in this room that are very happy, to go back to Senator Ringo's statement, that this Price Tag Commission came out with probably a higher number than some environmentalists would have on ballot measure 34. I mean, there's always going to be that controversy. And as far as Senator Atkinson has said, you know, he's not sure he trusts, you know, that we're always going to be accurate. I remember in the 1980s when I was doing a doctoral project, I called here, and at that moment in time, both the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer were Republicans. Maybe that would have made us or some of us, more confident. This is going to be a changing landscape, and what I'm asking for is as many ways that we could come at. Maybe you might even have some ideas of how you adjust this committee to make it more bulletproof in terms of criticism. Senator Ferrioli, respectfully, I suggest that a lot of voters don't want to read 11 different citizens' opinions on a certain ballot measure. They want to look at that title, they want to look at that description, they want to look at a price tag and move on, especially when you have about 40 different ballot measures to look at. So this is a very special thing. Yeah, it does have a good housekeeping seal of approval, so to speak, but that's the way Oregon's voters want it. They want as much information as they can get as quickly as they can get it. And our job today, and as long as we've got this ballot measure in front of us, is to make this committee as objective as we can make it, not let it stay the way it is.
Well, Chairman, I have a suggestion that may move us off the dime here, at least in my opinion. What I'd like to ask for is that a statement be prepared on Measure 11, as we would have seen it under the proposed statute. And I guess, Madam Chairman, what I'd like to know is, you know, okay, let's look at the cost drivers, or let's start with the statement that appeared in the voter's pamphlet, because that one was prepared under the existing rules. I'd like to know how you're going to capture the savings from the reduction in the crime rate. Because clearly, mandatory minimum sentencing kept people off the street and produced measurable reductions in crime rate. It also, because of mandatory minimums, produced measurable reductions in recidivism. And so now, you know, we're not looking at a moving target. We're looking at something that we know had cost parameters. We know what the costs are today because we've got the as-built numbers. But I'd like to see the methodology you use to try to capture the savings from the reduction of crime to citizens in Oregon, the reduction of the cost to victims, the amount of victims' compensation, the reduction in recidivism. Those are savings drivers. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be, I think, very difficult for you to come up with estimates, even though you have those statistics to drive from now that are actually available to you. I think it's going to be very hard for you to figure out what the savings are from a proposal like Measure 11. But I'd like to see it on paper so that we can see how you will capture those costs and those savings. Methodology and...
Actually, maybe it'd be appropriate to bring in the Director of Corrections and have him do a walkthrough in terms of what's happening to the corrections budget since ballot measure 11 passed, if you want to go that far, Senator Ferrioli.
I'm trying not to go as far as we need to get at the facts here, but I'd like to see the methodology that's proposed by this bill.
I appreciate this discussion because, again, you basically are what we face every time we confront a ballot measure. We don't have a crystal ball. We try to take the best information from all sides, private citizens come in and testify, who are for or against, agencies give us information, and from that we try to project. And I'm trying to estimate what ballot measure 11, hindsight. We have different numbers today, but that's hindsight. We don't have hindsight. We have what is presented today, just like you do when you pass a law and you get that fiscal impact from the budget group downstairs that says, we think this is what it costs, or this is how much you might save, or this is the impact. To then to go back and try to, were they right or wrong? I mean, it's a tough, we're trying to, again, I appreciate the discussion because I truly believe, in having sat on this committee for 4 years, we've got a system that isn't working, in my opinion, to the best interest of the voters. We're not giving them as much information as I think they should have. And that may be a personal, I think there are people in this room who would also concur with that. We have run across a loophole that I think is, again, I cited, was a problem. So anytime anybody wants a no fiscal impact, they just put the legislature implement. And we, by current law, cannot address what that means. So therefore, there's a big gap in information. Our intent here is really to try to give voters as much information that is within the current
guidelines of direct impact. And as I mentioned, we can't start going off on some tangent about what it might mean on some other part of the economy or this or other aspects that we all know law can have an impact on. It's really the direct financial impact.
Your role is actually quite limited. According to the statute, you're required to estimate revenues, expenditures, and indebtedness to state and local government, correct?
Correct.
There's nothing in the statute requiring you to estimate savings, correct?
Not right now.
Okay.
Reduction
of expenditure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Hershey, can you respond? Thanks, Ms. Taylor.
I've certainly appreciated the discussion also, and there are just two things I'd like to offer as you think about this further. This is your process. The legislature adopted the law that brought together these four officials and said, try to estimate what the cost, revenue, expenditure, or debt of the ballot measure might have. I have plenty to do without this too, but it's part of when I put on that hat, that's part of my role, but it's your process. And this process hasn't been in front of this body for over 20 years. It's been just kind of going along every election cycle creating estimates. So this is a tremendous opportunity that you have to think about the elections process, what information voters get, how you want them to get it, whether you want state government to provide it or you want it to be provided other ways. It is your process. We're just bringing some things that we've stumbled over in the last several cycles to your attention so that, you know, we're concerned because of the constraints of the current statute that we're not able to say to voters, by the way, this is an estimate and it could be a really big range and here's why we don't know exactly how much. We can't tell them that today. So, but it's up to you. So here's some information for you. Think about it. If you want us to just keep going the way we're going, we'll do that. If you want to get rid of it, we probably all have other things to do with our time, too. And, maybe there's another way for the public to get the kind of information that you'd like them to have when they make well-informed decisions. But we just, this is a group that's tried very, very hard within the boundaries that were established. I think the law was passed in 79. To do a job within an environment where measures that the voters act on are getting more and more and more complex over time.
Sam Atkinson.
Thanks. Can I just respond real quick? I know we're going to wrap. Are we going to wrap this up?
Well, we have someone else to testify.
Let me just give a little bit where I'm coming from to the committee, especially in response to some of the conversation with Senator Shields. Let me foremost say that I love the Rules Committee. This is the topics why I've been on the Rules Committee since I've been in office. I love it. When Peter asked me where do I want to serve, I said the Rules Committee, and that's what I love. This, and we've served together now for a while, and you still don't bat your eyes enough at me, but maybe that's not I wish you would. But the fact of the matter is I love the Rules Committee, and I love this conversation. I also love the initiative process. And we have got in this state people who love it and people who hate it. But despite the people who love it and hate it, I think we can agree on a couple things. Number one, it's an industry now. I don't like that part of it. There's special interests in the room. There's special interests who are watching us. There's special interests who are listening to us who make money off of the industry of it. So last session, I looked at a couple of problems that I believe are false problems in our process that you're bringing to our attention. This is another one that come to our attention that I can't get addressed because of the politics of the building. Number one, in 1968, Tom McCall put what I believe are time limits on the validity of signatures. And what that does is it forces a false timeline into letting good ideas gel and come forward from the public, and it causes an industry to happen. Now, that's not a silver bullet, but certainly that's a problem. And we addressed it last time, and we got hammered because we're Republicans and blah, 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 blah. The fact of the matter is it would, I think, change the industry. That's a problem. But the industry itself and the special interests around it don't want to do that because everybody makes money off of a broken system, number one. Number two, there, since I've been on the Rules Committee all these many years, the thing that has always been attracted to me is trying to change the way that the ballot title's written and taking the Supreme Court out of the process, because it slows it down, it makes people not trust it. And if you go back to the progressive movement in the early part of the last century, you'll notice that this, the initiative process was simply designed to, people didn't trust their government, much like today, where the legislature has earned the black eye that we have. And the initiative process in during the progressive movement was simply to bring the citizens and give them an equal level playing field with their state government. And we don't have that today. We have the people and the government, and the government has all these tools at its disposal to monkey around with the will of the people. Whether that, now monkey around can be partisan, monkeying around can be in the eye of the beholder, but I think you all agree that the ballot title process doesn't work, that the role of the Supreme Court doesn't work, that the timeline on the validity of signatures creates an industry, and many of those same critics are part of my heartburn with this. I thank you for bringing this to the committee, but to me this is just another part. I get really nervous when we're going to tinker with something that keeps us at an imbalance. So those are my general comments about it. I like it. I think this is all a great discussion. I hope, Madam Chair, that it's your intent to bring some of these real reforms. I don't think these are partisan at all. The fact that you said, well, when you were doing your doctoral work, that they were Republicans. Well, McCall was Republican. I believe the Attorney General at the time that they worked together to do this false timeline was a Democrat. You know, you can always manipulate something to kill one initiative that you don't like, but the problem is that it becomes part of the system that never gets reformed. I think the thing needs to be fixed, the whole thing, not just this piece. I think the ballot title needs to be reformed. I think that the timeline of signatures, I know I'm talking too long, but I care about this. And Senator Shields, thank you for your comments. That's where I'm coming from. And you're right. There's members of the Price Tag Committee I don't trust. I mean, I'll just tell you, I don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
But the process is what we have to protect, and I'm not sure this is the right answer.
I'm so glad, Senator Atkinson, that you are excited about examining the ballot title process, because we will have the opportunity to do that when we meet in Ashland on February 24th. At 6 p.m. at Southern Oregon University, and that will be one of the issues that we will be hearing, hopefully with students involved, and so we look forward to your participation. As I said earlier, I'm more than willing to entertain concrete proposals to either depoliticize or improve the Price Tag Committee process. I'm very happy to have that conversation. I'm not particularly thrilled to rehash the Price Tag's analysis of ballot measure 11, though it would be very interesting to take a look at what their estimates were back in 1992 or 94 of the cost of ballot measure 11. I think it's fair to say by any count the crime rate decreased significantly, one factor being the passage of ballot measure 11, but I think it's also fair to say, and we can bring in Department of Corrections Max Williams and have him testify, the increasing costs of in corrections due to ballot measure 11 and by has way overgrown any savings we've seen as a result of the crime rate decrease. But I'm sure Senator Burdick would be happy to invite you to the Judiciary Committee discussion about Measure 11.
Madam Chairman, I used Measure 11 because some of those arguments exist. There's great disagreement about cost and savings. I want to look at the methodology that the Price Tag Committee would employ to disclose the reduction of expenditures. Because if the devil's in the details and the question of trust is there, show me what you're going to do. Don't ask for the authority and then show me later what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do now so that I can have the discussion objectively about what rolls out. And I think Measure 11 is exactly the right one to use. Pick Measure 5 if you want to go even further into it. And it's not a retrospective. It's okay. Here's how we would approach the Measure 11 question. Here are the elements that we'd consider to determine what the avoidance of expenditures were. And you just show me the method. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Shields?
I just wanted to say that two of our members have already left, and I don't want to leave you without a quorum. I need to talk to Elizabeth for a minute before we get away.
Okay.
Are you wanting to do some very
yes.
quick... introduction?
Yes, I believe we have a measure introduction, so I don't know if you want to talk with her and come back in. Or
it doesn't matter to me,
okay.
Whichever way you want to go.
Close the public hearing momentarily on Senate Bill 27. I know that there's a number of that Ms. Eaton is in the audience and wishes to testify. Let's open a work session on bill introduction. And Ms. Harris, would you tell us what we have in front of us?
Sure, Madam Chair. We have LC Measure 959 relating to child abuse records. And we also have an amendment to Senate Bill 420. That was introduced by this committee when we met last week in its form as LC Measure 1082. Legislative Council informed me that there was a minor technical error in the measure when we introduced it as a committee bill. They suggested drafting an amendment to cure the technical error and then having the committee simply reintroduce it in its corrected form.
Okay. Let's start out with LC. Was it 959?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chairman, move that we accept LC, what is it?
LC
959 is a committee bill, if it's your pleasure to do so.
Senator Farrelly, I'll move the introduction of LC 959 as a committee bill.
To the motion.
To the motion.
The LC comes from a working group that worked for about a year and a half on a records retention schedule. It involved the archivists and DHS folks and all kinds of folks that deal with permanent retention of records. And so I just wanted to make sure that the committee members are aware that this is a product of a work group and that it was done by, chaired by Nikki Cerise at DHS, and lots of folks participated.
Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any objection to the introduction? So ordered. Senate Bill 420-1. Senate Bill 420, this is a technical amendment to, we probably need to bring it back. Probably need to bring the bill back in front of us.
Okay. I have the
yep. C. Okay.
So, Madam Chairman, let me ask you, I think you're right on the procedure. If we bring the bill back and schedule it for a work session public hearing,
yes.
then people will know. And I don't believe you can
right.
bring it back because
I
we've already introduced
sense.
It.
Right. I think we're going
to go through the motion. Not today. You have to
right.
post and bring it back.
And I don't know which committees. There have been a couple of technical issues mm-hmm. with some of the LC drafts that came forward in terms of relating clauses, as we're aware.
So let me ask this question, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
It seems like it's easier just to amend the introduction, but maybe it's easier to take the draft -1 amendments to the committee that's received the bill and have them go ahead and just open the public hearing and work session and amend it.
Yeah. I think that's probably the easiest, and it looks like we're going to be the committee that has the bill. So
okay.
I think that's going to be
okay.
easy. So we're going to close the work session. Thank you, Senator Shields, on bill introductions. Thank you. Reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 27.
Madam Chairman, I'm being summoned to another meeting.
That's fine. Ms. Eaton, would you please come forward? Is anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 27? Good morning, and thanks for joining us. And don't take your lack of a quorum personally. And we're down to a subcommittee of one at this point. So
that's all right. Good morning, Madam Chair. Lack of members of the committee. I'm going to be very brief. I am speaking for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, which represents citizens. And we are very supportive of Senate Bill 27. We have, for a long time, supported as much fiscal information as possible coming from those who prepare that kind of information about ballot measures. And we support having more information because people really need to know exactly what the fiscal impact is if the bill is enacted. They also need to have the information about what happens if it is not enacted so that you have a balance. And so listening to what has transpired in the committee this morning, I believe the question, one of the questions was whether or not how the public feels about the information and whether they trust the information and whether they think the Price Tag Committee is working well or whatever. From our perspective, it's working well. From our perspective, it does what it can to estimate costs. And those estimates, I believe, should cover a range, and they should speak to both sides. It's almost impossible to for people to understand, as Treasurer Edwards pointed out, what could be a better way to do it if they have both sides of the picture. So we hope that the bill will stay with you and will proceed. Whether I guess the League would support putting a local government knowledgeable person on that Price Tag Committee, because that does bring the aspect of what does happen at the local government. With regard to Senator Farioli's points that you need to know down to the household what it might cost you, I think that's an impossible question. You can do that for a county issue or a school district issue. You can do that estimate. I think it would be literally impossible for the Price Tag Committee to bring that down to the individual taxpayer in that kind of detail. As far as the question about the voter's pamphlet, it goes to every household in Oregon,
not just registered
voters' households.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
So, I just simply wanted to say we think it's a good idea to have both sides of a fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Eaton. I see in your written comments concerns about the $100,000 fiscal and its impact on local government. I think that's something the committee will ponder as we think about Senate Bill 27. I guess I would ask you, I know you've been very involved with the League for a number of years, whether you've ever heard any comment from any citizen questioning the integrity and the process of the Price Tag Committee.
No, we have not. And we, as I've indicated, the League has been long interested in having fiscal information about the impact of ballot measures. And to my knowledge, no, we have never had that questioned.
Okay. And I guess this is maybe other folks in the public may hear this, but I just would really appreciate hearing feedback from citizens that they have concerns that the Price Tag Committee is too political or it doesn't have integrity, and I just would really appreciate hearing that feedback as we discuss the amendments to Senate Bill 27.
We can bring it up.
Okay.
Certainly in our discussions. There was one other thing that we were raising, and that was in the addition of putting the other side in, it says that the Price Tag Committee may provide estimates, while the statute currently requires them to do it. And so as you proceed with your discussion, we'd like you to consider whether or not that may should be a shall.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience wishing to testify? Senator Shields, any further comments? We've lost the quorum and have no further business, so we're going to go ahead and adjourn the Senate Rules Committee. Thank you very much.